the Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
It's a short and fairly brief little location report, but it's a very special one because we have connected in Harrogate, in the store in Harrogate that's called Fodder, just by the Yorkshire Event Showground. We're speaking to Eva McDonald. How are you, Eva?
Hello, it's very nice to be here, and very spontaneous, but I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, so spontaneous, but so spontaneous, I wasn't even aware that we'd actually be doing this until we actually got the thing connected a few hours ago. But tell us, why are you actually in the Harrogate area, and why your place of work now with Warner Leisure is very much focused in West Yorkshire?
Just because I changed, really. I started off in Suffolk, and then about 3 months ago, I decided I would like a change, and I came up to Yorkshire. I got the call very randomly, very spontaneously, and it was a bit of a silver lining, really, because they asked me to cover, and at the end of covering, they said, "Would you like the job?" And I said yes, and then I came home, and that was 3 months ago.
Astoundingly, you've just revealed that not only are you in pantomime, but you're playing the fairy godmother in the upcoming pantomime. So, I mean, surely you're going to have an awful lot of makeup to actually age you, are you not?
I'm looking forward to doing the makeup. That's one of my favourite things about the stage, doing all the makeup. So I'm looking forward to it.
And presumably with the role of fairy godmother, the title of the pantomime is Cinderella?
Oh, yes. Oh, it's Cinderella. We've only just got the casting for it. I'm the fairy godmother. We've only got a cast of six, actually. It's quite a small cast. But yeah, I'm the fairy godmother, and I think the others are younger than myself. I'm probably the oldest one, so it probably fits. There you go.
Well, chronologically gifted. We don't do the O word. That's the important thing. So what have your thoughts been as far as this time in Yorkshire? So far, the 3 months you've been here, how has it been going?
It's been all right, thank you. It's I've been here before, so I knew the area, and it's a lovely place to be. Very green, very pretty, and a lot of nice places to visit.
And I think, as you might probably hear in the background, the fodder folk are beginning to actually close their chair scenarios, so we'll be heading off fairly shortly and doing a little piece, probably outside. And they've closed the door. Yes, Eva and myself have now actually left the joys of Fodder, the official farm shop of the Yorkshire Agriculture Society. Clearly, tongue-twisting is not my forte today. But Eva, we've done the photo shoot, not with Spike, but with a couple of wooden horses, quite literally pulling wooden carts and so on. So you feel as you step back into this mini location report almost seamlessly.
Yeah, it's a really pretty place. I've never been here before, and it's very, very decorative outside. It's very, very cute and quaint, I think. But yeah, I've never noticed it before.
Yeah, a few miles away from the metropolitan busyness of the town of Harrogate, we have this little oasis of calm, and of course the excitement of the Warner Leisure for Complex at NID as well. So let's talk a little bit more about that. Pantomime is coming up, as we said. You are the fairy godmother. Have you already got the songs that you're going to be singing and performing in that? Or is it a case of, we haven't even started rehearsals yet, don't talk to me about songs?
We haven't started rehearsals, but we did get the script a week ago. I've got a little Disney princess song. I can't remember what it's called. And, get to have a little Disney princess solo, which would be quite nice. It's a very me character and a very me song, I think. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I suppose Bibbidi Bobbidi Bow is one that comes from the original Fairy Godmother in the animated version, but who knows? You'll have to let us know and keep us appraised of that. Can anybody come and see the pantomime? Do you have to attend the Warner Brothers complex at NID? How can people actually see you on the stage?
Oh, yeah, no, it's only it's a Warner's Warner's Entertainment Guide Programme thing, you call it. I don't know what to call it. A Warner's event. So, yeah, it's only for guests, unfortunately. But you can come if you want to be a guest. You can come specifically for the pantomime. People do. It's in November and December.
And I'm sure that whole notion of Disney being done by Warner is something which could have people panicking all over the world, really, in a whole range of things. Let's not talk about that. In terms of the CD, we have to ask the question, how is this long-awaited Eva McDonald CD progressing?
Do you know what? I'm getting round to it. It sounds ridiculous because it's been such a long time, but it's because I've been focusing on, like, climbing the holiday park ladder. So now that I'm at Warner's, the plan is to get round to it as quickly as I can now. I did do a couple of things last year for a show reel to get Warners, and now that I've done that, now I can focus completely on releasing a song or something, a cover or something, as something similar as such. It's in the works, Alex. It's in the works, but it's looking promising.
Well, I can speak as somebody who is quite used to being patient in terms of waiting for various other bits and pieces. I'm sure it will once again be worth waiting for. Ava McDonald, it's been fabulous connecting with your good self. We'll see you again, no doubt, in Zoom and hopefully maybe in the studio in the not-too-distant future.
I hope so, yes. I really do, because it's a long working day for myself, but I'll try to squeeze it in.
If there was an activity that can provide you with a sense of well-being, a positive outlook on life, be good for the body and mind, and also help reduce stress, you might well say, what is this activity? Well, it's a simple word called volunteering. And we're delighted now to be able to welcome two fabulous folk, one of whom is a volunteer to the programme, and indeed the person behind a whole range of other factors as well with the British Heart Foundation, Sarah Boardman. How are you, Sarah, first and foremost?
Hi, Alex. I'm great, thank you. And thanks for having us on today.
Excellent. You're the British Heart Foundation's Retail Volunteering Operations Manager, and you've worked for the BHF for 12 years. So presumably your best place to actually see how volunteering can really improve people's overall sense of well-being.
Alex, that's correct. And it's an absolute joy, actually, to do this job every day, because what that means for me is that I get to interact with all of our volunteers up and down the country in our over 680 shops we have. It makes me jump out of bed every day to go and meet our wonderful volunteers.
And we're delighted now to be able to welcome another wonderful volunteer himself, of course, 17 years of age. He's from Hampton. It's Harry McCoy. How are you, Harry?
Good, Alex. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. Harry, as we said, you're 17. You're a volunteer from Hampton. You signed up to gain work experience and so on. Just talk us through this and how your work in Teddington, which is not too far away from Strawberry Hill, actually has helped with respect to studying for your A-level.
Well, I think one of the key things actually is it's really been just good to like get away from work. You know, because some days I'll just spend all my time inside, you know, studying away. But when I go to the shop, it's a good space to be in. You know, you go there, you help out, get away from it all. I'd say that's really what's good about it.
I mean, in a sense, you're doing another kind of work. It's a variety on that side of things there. But presumably you've also developed some skill sets as well, which, you know, things like work experience. Everybody is saying, what do young people actually need more of? Work experience. That presumably has also been the case with your with respect to yourself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like before I entered, I had basically zero just because it's so hard to find these days. But, you know, now I can basically operate a till, I can steam clothes, organization management. It's all of those kind of things like that you just pick up on that I definitely would also say adds to the whole experience.
And how have your fellow 16 and 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds actually responded to the fact that you're volunteering for the British Heart Foundation? Do you get admirational nods in the direction? Are they also encouraged by the whole thing? Or are they saying, no, we want to continue with our schoolwork and do something completely different?
Oh, no, I'd say a lot of my friends really do think it's a good idea. And some of them also do volunteer at BHF. I know that. But I'd say the main thing from some of them is they usually complain about sort of like how I have time to do it and everything. But, you know, I kind of always tell them the same thing, which is, you know, it's workable hours. You know, like if I couldn't make my Sunday shift, I can always work the Sunday shift, you know. But yeah, I'd say most people are really positive about it.
Sarah, back to yourself again. I mean, from this particular point of view, I mean, Harry presumably is a classic, a platinum-clad example of an ideal volunteer. I mean, is this something which is a typical response that we're actually getting from yourself? And is it something that you said, yeah, that's one of the good things about the British Heart Foundation? It's literally volunteers across the board, all ages can actually help with this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Alex. I mean, and I recently met Harry. We did a photo shoot in Teddington, and he's an absolute joy and a pleasure to have on board. It's really interesting that, you know, we know from our research that Gen Z, as they're called, are actually by far the more likely age profile to want to come and volunteer. And 53% of our new recruits are actually between the ages of 16 and 24. So it's an interesting shift, really, in the respect that, you know, 16 to 24 year olds are really seeing the benefit of volunteering. And at the British Heart Foundation, we absolutely see it as a win-win situation. So Harry's already spoken about, you know, the value that he gets from volunteering. And also we get, you know, incredible value from the 16 to 24 year olds joining us and bringing some of the skills that they have. You know, we've pivoted our business so that online selling is something that we've become heavily involved in now, and people like Harry like to get involved in that side of the business as well. So it's a really diverse operation, and actually volunteering is a particularly diverse group of people. It's one of the things that gives me the greatest pleasure. You know, it's almost a rich tapestry of people all working together for a very common cause, and it's like nothing you'll experience anywhere else. You know, from Harry being age 17, working in Teddington, volunteering there. You know, we have Brenda that works in the Teddington shop as well. And she's just an absolute force. She has a really strong connection to cause, and she's a more mature volunteer. So, and they all work together brilliantly. So it's a real win-win situation, volunteering at the British Heart Foundation.
Harry mentioned one of the key things in terms of his own concerns was reliability and making sure that you can adjust all these things. And that's why I was interested to see that flexibility is something that is also on offer from the British Heart Foundation, that in terms of obviously when you're able to actually do the particular time, you don't have to commit literally every single Saturday for the next 52 weeks of the year.
Absolutely, Alex. And Harry raised a really important point. And one of the things that we've learned with this real shift in the age profile is that we've needed to adapt our volunteering offer. You know, gone are the days really where people want to, you know, really lock into volunteering shifts on a regular basis. What we are seeing is that people want volunteering to be super flexible and really easy to do. So, you know, we're actively encouraging people to just dip in and dip out, you know, whenever you have an hour to spare, pop in and join us and help out. There's always a million and one things to do in a charity retailer. So, you know, there'll always be a list of things that they can support with. And that list is very diverse in itself. So, you know, there are lots of great tasks to get involved in. So we've needed to really think about our volunteering offer to make sure that, as Harry quite rightly said, you know, he never knows when he's going to have time to spare. So it really is a flexible approach to volunteering now at the BHF.
And Harry, which A-levels are you actually studying? What are your kind of key subjects at present?
Oh, yeah. No, I got some bad ones. Chemistry, biology and history.
Nice. I like that. It's a good sort of balance there. You've got the sort of the sciences and you've got the humanities. That's a good balance. And that added to your work with the British Heart Foundation, presumably is the ideal blueprint for a fine human being from Hampton. It's been awesome connecting with you, good self. Harry McCaughey, volunteer for the British Heart Foundation from indeed Hampton in Teddington. Who knows, if you're down in the Teddington area and it's a lovely part of the world, drop in the British Heart Foundation store there. You might even sign autographs, Harry, I'm sure. But for the moment, many thanks. And to Sarah Boardman, of course, who inevitably has to sign autographs because she is the British Heart Foundation's retail volunteering operations manager for 12 years. Sarah, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and keep on with your excellent work in the voluntary sector.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
Author of the Week. Featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Well, who would have thought that it was the 8th of April, 2022, when Dianne Floyd Bay made her debut on the Midweek Drive. A little over a year and a half later, she's back with us, of course, with Sunflower in the background, you'll be pleased to know, our moonling and personified bringer of positivity with the little heart of hers continuing to actually bring goodness to the world. Dianne, welcome back to Midweek Drive Author of the Week feature. How are you?
Oh, thank you. That was such a beautiful introduction. I appreciate it. And you're right. You're in my story garden. So this is where imagination takes place.
Precisely. So moving on from that, a couple of questions we need to ask. Did you manage to get to Costa Rica?
I did. Good memory. I did get to Costa Rica and it was a blast. I was with my daughter and she wanted to have just a really incredible time, epic time to remember. And so she had me jump off a cliff.
Right. Okay. I mean,
no,
obviously,
we didn't
child-parent relationships in the United States and particularly Texas might be slightly different from those of us in the UK. But yeah, that's okay. I mean, as long as you survive to tell the tale, that's the important thing.
It was so much fun. I was like, you want me to do what? And once I got down, I was like, can we do it again?
There you go. Again, classic line from that point of view. And the other question, of course, which we wanted to touch base on just as a sort of catch up, really, in terms of the Moonlings, any thoughts in terms of how the Moonlings are reacting now to the fact that India has actually managed to successfully land on the dark side of the moon? And as yet, I don't think I've actually found any Moonlings.
Yeah, I know. I think they're a little troubled that they picked that side of the town. But the Moonlings are doing great. And hopefully I'll have some updates in about 1 year for new adventures of the Moonlings.
Well, I know that we're keen to obviously progress that. And we'll be talking in this particular segment about rabbits and exciting rabbits in a few moments. Could also pass on best wishes from Rebecca Bond, who's since graduated since she last spoke to you on your debut back in 2022. But from, of course, the joys of North Carolina, where she's currently busily putting the final dots and T's to her dissertation, no doubt, at Trinity College Dublin on children's literature, it's Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you both?
Excellent. Now, so we've dealt with Texas authors before, Jessica, and we know that they probably know the sweet tea question. We won't spoil it for
yes.
Diane as yet, but I think before we move into the sweet tea question for Diane, maybe you'd like to throw in a few general questions for our author of the week.
Yeah, I mean, your book about the rabbit, it seems so cute. I think that there is a reason why rabbits are some of the most loved protagonists for children's books. It's so sweet and cute. But I'm really curious about where you get your inspiration for all of your children's books.
They come in different forms. This particular one, it's twofold. One, an artist from England, as a matter of fact, was a friend of mine in Dubai, and she had this teeny tiny little oil painting that she did with just a dot practically of a bunny rabbit in a forest. And I was like, I love that bunny rabbit. She says, you can't even hardly see it. I go, there is a story there. And so it just kind of set with me. And I was with my grandson, who's at the time, he was about 1.5, I guess. And we were playing imagination and so forth. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know what I'm going to do with that bunny story. It popped in my brain. And before we knew it, we had Boomer, the curious bunny.
And how do you start to write your stories? Is it because you start with a character like Boomer? Kind of start like working on the art and visualizing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think for many of us authors, we all have different styles. For me, it comes in different flavors. I could be working in the garden and the host story comes to me and I come in and write it. In other ways, I think of a character like I did with Boomer, the bunny rabbit. And like you, I love bunny rabbits, and they are so heartwarming. And when I was a classroom teacher, I had a bunny rabbit in the classroom for all of the kids to take care of. And so it was just natural that I wanted to do something with a bunny. And it works.
Boomer, of course, is a curious bunny who loves excitement. Staying home doesn't offer him the same fun it gives his brothers and sisters, so he hops off to see what he can see. When he does, what do you think awaits him? Now, clearly, there are all sorts of things that can happen to an adventurous rabbit, many of which I can't go into because of the sheer shock value that actually impacts the whole thing. I mean, the notions of Watership Down spring to mind, in which Watership Down was originally promoted, at least the movie was promoted by, you've seen the movie, you've read the book, now you can eat the cast. So I'm not even going to go there. You know, it's a dreadful scenario. And of course, Rabbits have got a long-held challenge with respect to the notion of lucky rabbit's feet. I've never known a rabbit yet that's actually been happy to have actually had a foot taken off from its whole purposes. So, you know, rabbits have had a pretty tough time. So what is the case of Boomer? Is it a case of you thought, no, Boomer's going to be okay? Or have we got, do you put him through the mill, basically? Do you put him through the ringer of challenges?
No. You know, what I wanted to do is to write a book that would inspire kids to be curious. I don't know about in your country, but here sometimes kids are too connected to technology. It just blows my mind how kids can have an
Diane,
an
you
iPad
said last time you were one of the early pioneers. In your first interview, you actually said that when it came to computers, all my fellow teaching staff weren't really interested. They said, no, you were singing the praises of it now. You've almost got a full 180 on that now. I mean, you'd be saying you don't want ChatGPT to actually produce books next.
Not really. I know. Total reverse. But I want kids and adults to remember to be curious themselves. And so I thought, what better way to do that than to let a little bunny rabbit share curiosity. My husband and I enjoy walking and going along trails and so forth. And so that's how it kind of came to me. I thought, what does a bunny see through a bunny's eyes? And so I'd wake up early in the morning and hit the trail where I knew some bunnies were. And I would just kind of watch them and look at what they could see, which came up with the thing, what can we see, you know? And so that came sort of a sing-along in the book to see what we can see. And I thought if children could fall in love with Boomer, and I picked Boomer because of the name, because I thought it was a fun word for the kids to say. And it turned out, you know, I tried it out with different kids and they're like, no, boom, 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 Boomer. We love it. You know, so that's how that name came to be. And I thought, you know, I want you to stop, put things down, look at the world, look at the sky and use your imagination. And that's what Boomer's all about.
Joining Boomer as he heads off into the city where he meets a range of characters and goes on a variety of adventures. Can you share with us any of the kind of characters he meets when he goes into the city? I mean, again, can be a very scary place. I mean, if you actually headed to the city of Lincoln, for instance, heaven only knows what could happen. You could have swans, you could have butterflies. I just don't want to be, it's extraordinary. So who are the sort of friends of Boomer? I mean, does he meet a deer who's lost his mother, for instance?
That's great. I'll have to put that in my next one. I'm working on my second Boomer now. But yes, I mean, Boomer had never been out of his little area. So everything was kind of scary, just even as he's working his way into the city. But in answer to your question, in the city, you know, if you look at it from a rabbit's eyes, they can't see that high up. So paws. He thought, oh, what funny paws they have, but he meant human's feet, right? And that gives quite a giggle to kids. And when he's in the park, you made reference earlier to, he's like, oh my gosh, how can rain be coming from the ground? And of course it's a sprinkler. And again, that's a thing for the kids to go, I never thought about it from, you know, another point of view, which enables teachers to really have fun with that and have creativity for their own lessons in writing creative work, which is really important to me, is to write stories in school.
And this is a channel that permeates all of your work, it would seem, Diane. I mean, as we know, you're an award-winning international author, but you do actually write with the intention of inspiring children to be kind, to like themselves, and indeed, to quote yourself, embrace imagination. Do you feel as though we are losing that today in a world which seems to be ever more frenetic, ever more busy and so on? We're all busy doing nothing, it would seem, or buried under Satan's yoke, if you want to use an acronym. Is it something that, you know, just we constantly need to take the time to actually, as you say, embrace the imagination, take time to reflect on the journey as opposed to the destination?
Excellent question. There was a time that I would immediately just jump in and say, yes, we're losing it. But now that COVID's over and I'm getting back into the schools, I'm discovering that children love imagination. And if they really have a lot of people around them, including educators, that are helping them remember that their imagination's exciting, that they're going to be okay. That makes me really happy.
Well, it is important because they are the future. Jessica, I mean, a similar question to yourself, because obviously you're much closer to the readership of Diane's books than perhaps I happen to be. I know it's a shocker, but there we are. How do you feel these kind of stories can actually help work? And indeed, wearing your academic hat as somebody who's actually studied children's literature for your master's degree, what are your thoughts on this? It's not working via telepathy, Jessica. One needs to unmute oneself. I don't know. Sometimes it's just the technology.
Might be helpful.
Carry on.
Might be helpful. No, there's like a big reason why nature is used in children's literature. And a lot of people see nature in children's literature as kind of being related to growth and cycles of change and kind of helping children see change and embrace that. Because when you're a child, things just happen so fast and life feels like it moves so quickly, you know, when you're little. And seeing animal characters is most common in children's books, and for good reason. It helps them develop empathy, and it can help them kind of feel empowered by something that kind of doesn't usually have a voice. Like, children often aren't given voices quite as much. So I think there's a good reason why stories like this are so well loved. And I think everyone can find it charming to read a story about a bunny going outside on an adventure. And I think it's a story that you can kind of read over and over again. And I think that it's great because then kids can kind of see the bunnies outside. And or if they live in a city, they can, you know, think about going to a park maybe for the first time and kind of wanting to be close to see Boomer in real life and imagine what little bunnies might be doing throughout their day.
I think that's really interesting.
Thank you, that's so sweet. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The only thing I would say is a slight caveat, as I always thought that actually when you were a child, time seemed to be a never-ending stretch of, are we there? Are we there yet? You know, it seems to go on and on. It's only when we become more chronologically gifted that it seems to literally just go like that. I mean, who would have thought it was April 2022 when Diane made her debut on the programme? I don't know. What's happened in the intervening years?
A lot.
Exactly. Okay, let's motor on then. I think, Diane, you're ready for this. We couldn't ask it to you last time because this is a Jessica Burtis copyright question that she likes to put to most of our authors when it comes to nutrition and the role of the author. We did ask you last time about what music you like to listen to, and we headed down the line of Doris Day, etc. I suspect being based in Texas, even with time in Dubai and the Philippines, you might well give an affirmative to this, but Jessica, it's time for you to put that nutrition-based question to Diane.
So I'm curious, have you ever tried, there's a regional snack that you've probably heard of, but have you ever had sweet tea or boiled peanuts?
I've had both, and I love sweet tea, and I'm almost in shock when people don't have sweet tea. I'm like, how can
right.
I exist without sweet tea? Boiled peanuts are not my favorite.
That's okay. That's okay. We're on agreement about the sweet tea. It's okay. Nice to hear.
Yeah. I'd hate to set up an interstate war here between Texas and North Carolina just on the basis of disagreeing about boiled peanuts. I mean, we know what happened with the Boston Tea Party, and that was a different issue entirely. So, you know.
Exactly.
That's right. And also a little war between barbecue.
I was about to say, yep, we have our distinct barbecues.
Yes, and we do too. And I'm like, what is this? No, North Carolina is a gorgeous state.
Thank you. Oh, Texas seems beautiful. Have you lived there for your whole life?
Pretty much. I mean, I certainly grew up here. Texas is massive. And what people forget is that what the needs are in the panhandle is totally different in the center of Austin, or where I live in Austin, in the center of Texas, much less down the valley. And then El Paso, which is the point part going west, and then east, Nacogdoches. I mean, the needs are so different. And so, for example, it takes almost 16 hours to drive from Nacogdoches to El Paso. So you can imagine how the needs could be so different. The terrain's different, et cetera. So... But, you know, 16 hours is an easy drive.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, we know that you're also married, Diane, to a gentleman who can trace his ancestry back to one of the signatories on the Magna Carta, which is why you have your own copy of the Magna Carta around other bases. So there's a lot of kind of British cultural history in there, which brings us neatly round to your website, Diane Floyd Boehm, BOEHM.com. And I noticed that you've also started off with a fabulous little program called United Kingdom and Culture, in which, together with Dr. Jacqueline Kerbeck, you highlight the culture and news of the UK with special correspondent Helena Shard, and indeed Ian Pelham-Turner and Simon MacDonald. So, why did you decide to actually set up this UK and Culture podcast, which goes out, just for the benefit of the completists here, every Wednesday, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which would probably actually put it around about the same time as the Midweek Drive is launching, actually, also on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Just out of interest,
Just
why
that.
did you decide to set this whole process up? Is it a case of you have a love affair with the British culture, or you just can't understand how crazy we can be?
Well, I'll back up a little bit. So USA Global TV, I'm part of the family. And Ian, it's my understanding that Ian Pelham-Turner, the British broadcaster and royal photographer, et cetera, he reached out to Dr. Jacqueline and they came up with this idea. And then I was so excited when they asked me to join them. And then Simon MacDonald from Scotland, he brings a lot of history and shares about what's going on in Scotland. And then Helena Shard, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the three of them just bring so much. And it's our belief that, you know, over here on this side of the pond, I would say the majority of people absolutely love England, you know, love the UK. There's our common history, the 13 colonies. And if people were to search for their ancestry, yes, there's going to be Spain and, you know, if you're from Florida or whatever, but if you're from the 13 colonies way up north, the crossover in heritage is phenomenal. And of course, we study in American history, how we came to be the USA. So we really want to bring prosperity to our country through the knowledge and understanding the history and the fun of the UK. It's a real blessing to
Well,
do this show.
I'm just pointing out the fact that you have always got the opportunity to connect with the Midweek Drive. You can update our own particular pieces as well, so feel free to do so. You're an honorary Midweek Drivette, so you know there's another cultural line there that can cross over. And I'm sure Jessica Richard Fitzwilliams would also be a fascinating contributor to that UK and culture, especially if you like the Royals. Moving on. A Song for Peace, how's that been going? Because again, when you made your debut a year or so ago, we were talking very much about the need that we had for A Song for Peace. Tragically, we still have a situation where we need peace more than ever. But how successful was it in retrospect? Are there any plans to actually engage more with respect to that particular program?
Thank you for remembering it. And you can see A Song of Peace is right up there. I love that book. It has such a special meaning to me. People from around the world, you know, they're in pain, whether and their loved ones. And there's so many countries we don't talk about. We're concentrating on the Ukraine right now, and yet people in Yemen are still hurting. So it was important to me to write a song about peace. And thank you for remembering. I had about 24 different people from around the world sing the word peace. And it would be lovely to get more people. So to all your listeners, if y'all want to send me just singing peace, or saying peace over and over, and me including it, because I'm a true believer that the more we can bring joy, the more we can pray for peace, put that energy out there, that just maybe for a moment in time, we could have a little happiness, especially in places that have been hurting for so long.
Well, I tell you what, let's do a couple now because I don't think I did this last time around. So I'll take this first one, and Jessica can obviously put me to shame with her own rendition of the whole system. So let's see if we can go for this. Peace, Jessica.
That's okay.
Do I just sing it? Can I just say it? Anything?
Which,
Anything
whatever
that
you
you want,
wish.
whatever you wish.
I'll go simple here. Just peace.
Peace. So you might, when you send me a thing, go peace, 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 peace over and over, so I have more than just that little sound
Yeah.
bite.
Peace,
Yeah, that would
peace,
be
peace,
awesome.
peace, please. Let's have peace.
Amen.
Jessica, back to yourself for
Very much.
interviewing questions. Your next thought for Diane, please.
I'd love to know what some of your upcoming projects are and what you have planned now that we're going into the second half of the year.
Oh, thank you for asking. So, as you know, before I talked about my young adult historical fiction, Rise, A Girl's Struggle for More, and it did so well. My publisher was like, okay, I'm getting enough requests to know what happened to Ruby. So on November 1st, Ruby Takes Chicago is coming out, and I'm just super excited about that one. So hold
And how
on to
did you get your
that.
inspiration for that one?
Well, Ruby is my grandma. She was a trailblazer along with my mom, et cetera. So I'm lucky to have these role models. But Ruby, you know, she was born in 1904. She had a dream to do more. I mean, she wanted to have a family. She wanted to raise kids, but she also wanted to use her mind, like her five brothers, which turns out to be just like me, five brothers. And so she set out to make those dreams come true, and it was a real tough, long road ahead. And then when she received her degree from the university, she thought, "Well, I don't really want to go back home." She was at the train station, and her daddy gave her. This is all true. The money to travel back home by train, because that's how you did it in those days. And so she heard them say Chicago, and she's like, "Huh, I think I'm just going to go to Chicago." So she just went to Chicago, and she took whatever job she could get, and it's real interesting to see what the first one was. And until she found the job that fit in with her education, which was accounting and bookkeeping. So,
And of course,
wow, that's amazing. And
if memory
the purpose
serves,
is, yeah, go ahead.
Ruby was born in 1904. Is that right?
Correct,
Yeah,
correct.
so
In
there we are.
Oklahoma. And so we, today we use the word teenager, but back then, teenager, that word didn't exist. It didn't become a common word until the 1950s, I discovered. And so when you went through puberty, you were to get married. And she's like, luckily she had parents who were like, okay, just because you're 14 doesn't need you mean you need to get married, you need to be educated. So
Fairly
she was very
important, really.
fortunate. Yeah. So, but it was that generation is so fascinating, I discovered, because you know, your grandma didn't can't tell you everything when you're young, but you know, the car was coming in, telephones were coming in, television was coming, innovation, technology was taking off. And so these 19, 20 young kiddos that we would call teenagers today, they really transformed society in so many ways. Dating came to be. They were showing more than just their ankles and their dresses, you know,
Yeah, I mean,
dancing.
they ruined the world, let's face it. I mean, we should have gone back to the days of arranged marriages and horseless carriages, you know, or indeed just horse-driven carriages as opposed to horses, etc. It's just not good. Listen, let's move on to
Yes.
what I'd like to refer to as the Bamerverse, basically, or Dianaverse, basically. Any plans to actually put together a narrative in which you have Harry the Camel meeting the little girl in the moon, encountering Boomer the Curious Bunny? I mean, surely it's crying out to actually have some crossover here. Any thoughts on that one?
You know, you're amazing because really and truly, because I'm just I'm so impressed because I'll tell you a little secret. You're hearing it first here that no, I don't have it where Harry actually meets the moonlings, but that's a good thought for me to think of. But the moonlings love Earth, as you know, as much as the Earthlings love the moon. And through the observatory in Tycho Town, where the Moonlings live, they go on these adventures. And so they see a lot. So you're going to see camels, Are you going to see birds? Are you going to, you're going to see a lot.
Right.
And the purpose again is to give a lot of kiddos who don't have an opportunity to travel to learn about various animals, various places. And again, I work in the teacher in me, because you might be in Kenya and Uganda, you might be in Australia and England, discovering various things, but you're also learning geography, and you're learning that the love of someone that can look different can be so similar to you. So why not love and be kind to them too?
Well, we know, of course, Diane, because you revealed it on your first interview with us, that you were indeed a moonling as a child, and you used to move your bed around to actually ensure that you caught the phases of the moon in all sorts of other ways. Personally, I would have been a little bit concerned that I became a werewolf when the moon actually occurs, so I probably wouldn't do that. But that probably just shows too much experience of the Universal horror movies. It's a different line there. And in particular, Lon Chaney Jr. as Lawrence Talbot. Meanwhile, Jessica, any other thoughts you'd like to share?
If someone wanted to start reading your books, what do you think they should start with?
Wow. They're also different in so many different ways. But I think I would start them off with Harry the Camel. I just love Harry because he discovers there's nothing better than being who you are. And the book A Time to Fly, I love that because it inspires you to not be afraid, to take a chance and go for it. And then once you do, you go, I don't know why I was so worried. Look, it's through it pretty easy. So I would say that.
Important, of course, Diane, but we will be following this little interview with a number of safety issues with respect to coping within the water environment of Britain as well, because we're still losing too many lives because people are diving in without so much as a by your leave. So we'll be talking about that, plus, of course, how to cope with holiday disasters. But that's still to come. Let's go back again to your YouTube channel, which is, of course, the Story Garden YouTube channel. That's quite fascinating because you actually facilitate the notion of children listening to hear different children authors read their stories. Now, the recent Newark Book Festival, we featured a young writer who was 9 years of age, who actually just produced her first novel, all about Dogtopia. And again, it was a fascinating insight on that. Is that something which you think, you know, you wanted to develop more of that? Because we've already spoken about how children have these huge imaginations, actually broadening that imagination and using the YouTube channel to facilitate it as well.
I think that's wonderful. What confidence it gives kiddos to do this. Yay for Dogtopia, did you say it was?
Dogtopia.
Dogtopia, fantastic, fantastic. They'll have to come be in the Story Garden. The more that young children use their minds and find positivity in their creativity, the stronger they're going to be. I think, Jessica, you might have thoughts on that.
Sorry, you cut out for a moment. Do you mind repeating it?
I said the creativity that kids have on YouTube and in creating their story, I just think makes them stronger and want to continue to develop their stories. And I was just thinking as your major that you might have some strong thoughts and opinions on that as well.
I definitely agree. I think it's great that there are some platforms where children can see other children doing work and then they can be inspired. I feel like that's something that was really important to me growing up and kind of seeing like YouTube and other websites that children would put art on and write on, you know, with your parents supervising, and getting to see that somebody your age can do these things because it's not just adults doing this. And I think that that makes a massive impact when you're a little kid.
Absolutely.
It works in a whole variety of ways as well from that point of view. So I think Sarah Bullimore, who's the coordinator of the Newark Book Festival, will have details of the author of Dogtopia. We'll make sure that gets across from our point of view. But she said the author was somebody who was inspired by the book festival to write her own text. And you know, good on her from that sort of point of view. So great stuff there. Okay, moving on. In terms of the future, obviously, since we last spoke, you are heading down to Costa Rica. Any plans to go further afield? I know you're keen traveling Seoul. Any thoughts that you'd like to share with us, in addition to obviously the upcoming novels that you're going to be producing?
Traveling is mostly here in the United States for right now because of family. that we need to do and address. We also have now a home in Virginia so that I can be close to our grandson, and that's very exciting. But I hope to be heading off to Canada at some point. But a lot of people don't consider that I'm really traveling since it's part of North America. But if I can head off anywhere outside of the USA, I would love to go to Northern England, because we haven't done Northern England. We've done all the Southern. We've done Wales. We've done Ireland, but we need to do Northern Ireland. And we need to, we being my husband and I, Scotland. So everyone tells me that I need to do it before I get any older, because there's a lot of climbing in Scotland.
Yeah, especially if your children are actually telling you to actually dive off the top as well, which is what you did in Costa Rica. Yeah. So it's not good there. I'll just give you a mention. It was Grace, of course, who was the author for Dogtopia, a 9-year-old author who was inspired by the Newark Book Festival to write her own story in 2022. It was inspired by Sugar, her ball of furry love, who flew her to Suggy Bugland and showed her all its wonderful secrets one holiday when she was missing her. So there we are. That's Dogtopia by Grace, of course. We have been talking about the fabulous world of a rabbit, in particular Boomer the rabbit, which is of course the one that's the latest production of Diane Floyd Baim. Best way to actually encounter Boomer, of course, presumably all the usual sites to go and find out all about Boomer the Curious Bunny, illustrated by Judy Gaudette, of course.
That's correct. Judy Gaudette's a fabulous. She lives up in Maine, and she studied children's illustrations, and I just think she brought Boomer to life. She understood my imagination. And you can purchase on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, in your local bookstores. And it can be Amazon UK if you're in the Middle East, the Arab version of Amazon, etc. So we made it as easy as possible.
Quite rightly so, too. Jessica, last two questions for Diane, please. I think she should have some vague familiarity with them, but you never know. Off you go.
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Oh, of course. I love being with y'all. I never know what's going to happen, but what I really love about it is it's so free-flowing. It's not staged. I don't know what you're going to ask me, and I truly appreciate that.
Well, Diane, we've had lots of rehearsals just actually getting that spontaneity going, so it's good to know that you're actually there. So it's good to see that Boomer has appreciated the Zoomer. Next question, Jessica.
Will you be coming back soon?
I hope so. How's tomorrow sound? We can have tea.
Perfect. Perfect.
There we are. Well, obviously, another tick in the box for North Carolina and Jessica's specific campaign to ensure that all creatives avail themselves of sweet tea. So excellent stuff. Diane, huge thanks. Many thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on. And up next, let's say a series of interviews about coping with holiday challenges.
There you go.
Well, three words which we certainly covered at length earlier in the year when it came to water safety were indeed call, tell, and throw. Effectively, I'll just say those are words again, of course: call, tell, and throw. But let's remind folk once again of why this is so important. If you happen to see somebody struggling in the water at any time, not just on an August bank holiday, but what is the situation here, especially when we see that, you know, 83% of men were comprised of people drowning in the 20 to 24 age range, basically. Let's dig a little bit deeper into some of these findings, etc., and speak to somebody who knows a little bit more about the challenges when it comes to preventing accidents. It is indeed the head of leisure safety at the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents. That's David Walker. How are you, David?
I'm very good. Thanks for having us on today.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self. But again, this is something which we happy to obviously promote, etc. But just looking at some of these figures, 226 people accidentally drowned in the UK last year, 44 of them in August, more than any other month, etc. And as we said, a significantly high proportion of those were indeed men who were in the young age range, etc. There are probably a number of reasons for that. But this whole notion of hashtag respect the water and preventing those accidental drownings, it's just so important. Why is the message not getting through?
I think it is a critically important, it's a life-saving message, and it's something that in certain parts of the community it is going through, but it isn't something that's necessarily universally recognised. Most people would know to call 999 if they see somebody in trouble in the water. And then after that, I think it becomes a little bit more difficult to remember, which is why, again, we've really tried to simplify the messaging to call, tell, throw. And essentially, it's call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard if you're at the sea, or fire if anywhere else. Tell the person in the water to float to live, to fight off the cold water shock issues, which we can talk about a little bit later, and then throw them something to help them float or to exit the water. Really simple messages, but once you get past that 999 call, often what happens is an instinct that kicks in for people to jump in and help, and we just want to put a little bit of a break at that point there, because that's where, unfortunately, we see one incident turning into, you know, 2-3 people in the water and a multiple fatality event, which drives some of these really high incident numbers in August and late July.
Now, I mean, people accidentally drown in rivers, lakes, canals, quarries, reservoirs, and so on. I think a lot of people, again, still have this illusion, perhaps, that, oh, we don't have to worry about inland water scenarios. That's perfectly okay. It's if we were actually going around the coast that we'd have to be very concerned about our safety. Clearly, you know, you can have an accident with water in any environment, but certainly inland and rivers are highly problematic as well.
Yes, and it's something that it's surprised a lot of people. I mean, obviously, if you go to the coast, you know, there's moving water, tide states, storm conditions, and all sorts of factors which may make that water more dangerous. So that equals about 4 in 10 or 3 in 10 of all the drownings. But 6 in 10 of the drownings, so the majority of the drownings, happen at inland waterways, at lakes, rivers, and coasts, and those sorts of places that are near to our homes. I'm in the middle of Birmingham today doing these broadcast notes, and there are thousands of people walking past the canals, and we can all think of city centre and urban locations where there's loads of water. It's those sorts of spots where we see that 6 in 10 of all those drownings happening. So this is a universal everyday danger that we just need some really simple messages just to remind people what to do if they see somebody in trouble, which is call, tell, throw.
Prevention is obviously better than cure, and certainly prevention is better than death. And there are a number of key tips that you've put forward from the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents, which make perfect sense, really. But again, probably need to be there as a checklist. Number one, of course, don't jump into unknown areas because you can have hidden hazards below the water. Avoid alcohol when you're dealing with any water whatsoever, and make sure that children are supervised. And of course, you know, use the right kind of safety equipment as well. I mean, these are all kind of, in a sense, self-evident ones, David, but probably they need to be there as a checklist in the excitement of suddenly going into a whole new area, whatever the weather happens to be, saying, oh, right, water, I've got to dive in there, etc. You need to be very careful.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are all pointers. I mean, this weekend, hopefully it's going to be lovely weather. The air temperature is quite warm, it got much warmer, 20 into 20 degrees in some places. But critically, the water is still cold, and it's still cold enough to trigger cold water shock, which is something that limits your ability to breathe, limits your ability to swim, and brings on a drowning event. So all those sorts of things about jumping in or not taking alcohol, they're all fantastic information. But what the thing that catches people out and people don't often realize is that cold water shock risk, which is again why we're going back to really the core messages: to respect the water, call 999, tell them to float, and throw them something that helps them to either float or exit the water. And critically, what we're looking for people to do is to help somebody from the side, so we're not having those multiple events, and get those professionals in. And when they turn up, they're wearing buoyancy aids, wetsuits, all sorts of protective equipment, and it's largely to protect them from that cold water. That's really what we're protecting our emergency services from. So if we're doing it for them, just think about what the effect is on you and me in a pair of shorts and sunglasses. So that's critically why we're pushing this Respect the Water message this weekend.
And finally, in terms of floating, I mean, you know, obviously float on, very important in terms of the whole system. The tendency if somebody did actually find themselves in an unfortunate position of being challenged by the water, etc., or in difficulties within that, you do need to, it seems counterintuitive and counterproductive as well, actually just look to float and maintain your own body's natural buoyancy.
Yes, this is the second counterintuitive thing, and you're absolutely right there. Once you land into cold water, your initial instinct, and we've all felt this when we've been in a cold shower or water we've not expected, is your body tightens up and you tend to thrash about. And you've got to fight that instinct if you're in water. So the float to live is really simple. It's that starfish shape that we all learn when we were doing swimming lessons at school. Hips forward, ears back in the water, and just try to relax and focus on your breathing. And what that does is that cuts through the cold water shock process. So it controls your breathing, it keeps you floating, and then you can wade with minimum, you know, wade, wobble, doggy paddle, whatever that kind of sculling motion is, to get back to a safe place and hopefully somebody to help you out. So that's that critical scenario which leads to a drowning death in water if somebody panics. And equally from the land side, call, tell, throw. So we're trying to get both people to relax, pause, and critically help each other from a safe place. And that's what we're trying to get in the middle of in terms of this drowning prevention message. All of that can be found looking for under the hashtag Respect the Water. So all of those information, videos, and advice from Aral and I, from Fire Crews, from Rosper, from Royal Life Saving Society, we all are pushing the same message this weekend and over the summer months, because those two bits of information are life-saving, and it absolutely has saved lives over the last couple of years. So it's Respect the Water, call, tell, throw is the key information we're trying to get people to look at this weekend.
David Walker, Head of Leisure Safety for the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents, Rosper, and keep on keeping on, David.